Hey, I'm James Blake, and you're listening to Inside the U.S. Open.
Coming up on Inside the U.S. Open.
That last week of the main draw, when all the kids are now going back to school, you're going to see some of our veteran ball persons out there. And they know the job so incredibly well. I hope people come out to see them as opposed to seeing even the players, because they work so well.
It's like air traffic control, really. This is like an air traffic control room, and I'm lucky enough to be the one that gets to tell planes at what altitude they have to fly.
I think my goal coming here was really to kind of show everyone the fun side of tennis. All these players that I've gotten to know over the years, competed against, are awesome people. I mean, I'm really inspired by all of them.
Hey everyone, it's Nick McCarville, and it's episode 4 of Inside the U.S. Open. On this episode, we're keeping things on court as we chat with Tina Tapps, the director of ballpersons, as well as Francesca Fanchin, one of the many ballpersons here at the Open. And then we have a sit-down with on-court announcer for Arthur Ashe Stadium, Andy Taylor. You're going to know his voice. We get some insight into his job. Lastly, we're talking with Bethany Maddox-Sand. She's injured this year, but she's been very busy otherwise. So first, let's head on court and kick things off with Tina and Francesca. Well, one of the most unique jobs, I think, at the U.S. Open is being a ball person. And I'm here today with Tina Tapps, the director of U.S. Open ball persons, as well as Francesca Fanchin, who's in her 8th year on the team. And I actually want to point that out first, because a lot of tennis tournaments around the world, Tina, ball kids, but that's not the case here at the U.S. Open.
We have ball kids, we have ball men, ball women. We even have a couple of seniors in there, too.
Yeah, so detail for me about sort of that approach of not just having junior kids or, you know, youngsters being on court, but it's essentially a role for all ages.
All it takes is an opportunity to come out to the tryouts, and anyone who has the skills to, throw and catch and run and be agile and understand the scoring in tennis can try out.
Very cool. So Francesca, tell me, for you, what sort of first brought you to this position? You tried out, what was it, 8 or 9 years ago?
Yeah, I tried out when I was 14 years old when I tried out for the first time, and I was so excited, and the first thing I thought was like, I'm going to be right next to a player. I'm so excited. I'm going to throw a ball to Federer, like Serena, and then I got in that year, and I've been doing it ever since. I skipped 2 years for college, but I still have been doing it. It's like one of my favorite jobs I've ever done.
And I'm guessing those first year or two, you're not necessarily doing a Federer Serena match, right?
I'm definitely not doing a Federer Serena match. I'm doing a court 15 match. But I mean, we work up, and it's like, it's very interesting because like the supervisors get to know us and they get to see our like strengths and everything. And that's where like their leaders come in handy. So we're all rookies then, but, you know, we graduate into becoming veterans.
Okay, so now detail for me a little bit about that process, because you've got someone like Francesca who's now done it for 8 years, but you've got a lot of first years. Tell me about the number of people and sort of then that process for people to kind of climb the ball person ladder.
I mean, we go back to the tryouts where we had nearly 500 individuals trying out, and we have about 200 people coming back and only room for maybe 75 additional. But truly, anyone can do it. I remember the first time Francesca came, her mom was with her too. Her mom, her coach, and I think her mom was even more excited than she was about doing the job. But later on, she got a lot more excited when she spent some time on the court with some amazing players.
And Tina, tell me, what are you looking for when someone comes to tryouts, right? And you've got hundreds of people. Obviously, I think tennis knowledge would help. But what do you need for someone to then have them have the opportunity to be a good ball person?
Well, before we make our selections, after we look at their skills and everything, it's about talking to them and understanding what their expectations are going to be of it. And there's such incredible camaraderie and a lot of learning going on. It's a family, and we have to introduce new kids and people into our family.
And tell me, so if I were to wake up in the morning and I have a U.S. Open ball person day in front of me, what does that day entail, usually?
Well, sometimes it's pretty long. But, like, it depends. I start maybe a 9:30 shift. We get on court. We do warm-ups for the players because it's opening matches. And we get a break. We have lunch. We go back on court. We get another break. And those that are, like, over 18 get to go back on court again, get another break. And, I don't know, you just get to experience, like, all the matches throughout the day. Getting into the night matches is always way more fun. Yeah. Like, the vibes are electric. And I love just being around the crowd at night. It's really cool.
And how do you, Tina especially, how do you sort of prepare the ball persons for the different things that they face on court? Because most tennis fans out there know that you're responsible for getting the balls for the players, but there's a lot more nuance to the role than just that.
Again, it's the fact that we have so many veterans coming back year after year. They provide the new rookies that are coming in with a lot of, of their experiences. And it's a culture of, you know, learning together. The veterans are the ones who really help the rookies out in terms of what to expect on the court. All the nuances, you know, towels and umbrellas and all of that. So works out really well with the veterans taking care of the rookies.
And aside from towels, ice packs, balls, what are the other responsibilities for the actual ball people on court?
Basically, take care of the player. You want to make the player feel as comfortable as possible on the court, as well as taking care of the lines people. Sometimes they need water. You never know if they're feeling good. But all in all, it's all about the player. Like, the player comes first, no matter what, on the court.
And tell me, so a few years ago, I was actually working as a journalist, and I saw you in the stands, and it looked like you were doing some sort of review, or you're watching over. So tell me how that works, giving feedback throughout the tournament and making sure that people stay on top of what they're doing. You know, obviously you've got your veterans, but people are getting notes after you come off court. Is that right?
Well, the key is to having everyone become successful. So we have evaluators out there throughout the entire tournament, not just the beginning when the rookies are here, but throughout the entire tournament. Everyone has to stay at the very highest standards, do the job well. Again, it is about the players, making sure that they have an incredible experience here at the U.S. Open. We cherish the work that they do, and we applaud them for the work that they do, and hopefully they'll applaud the work that we do.
And what's different if I look at, say, the Australian Open, French Open, Wimbledon, what would be different about what you're doing as far as on court? Or maybe there's more similarities.
I think our teams, we have veterans that have been here, you know, for 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, 3 years, and all the different ages and all the different experiences. I don't think they have those so much at the other Grand Slams, because I don't think they have ball persons working that many years. And truly, it is a family. I mean, our ball kids keep coming back because they enjoy the job and they see their heroes on the court, and they want to make sure they give them the best experience that they have.
Well, we're sitting outside at the U.S. Open. It's a little bit windy, but those are, you know, we have to deal with those conditions in the podcast and tennis world. What about for you? I always know that there's, I don't want to say oldest, but there's usually a very experienced ball person or someone that's come back who's in their senior years that is part of the team.
The supervisors are actually all former ball persons, and that last week of the main draw, when all the kids are now going back to school, you're going to see some of our veteran ball persons out there, and they know the job so incredibly well. I hope people come out to see them as opposed to seeing even the players, because they work so well.
No, I think they do. And I think from TV, there's a lot of tennis fans out there that would recognize Francesca's face or a lot of the faces of ball persons that have been there for years and years on Ash. Now, you don't have to single out players, but what you talked a little bit about loving the atmosphere out there on the big courts. Tell me about a couple of your favorite moments, because I'm guessing you've spent plenty of time on Ash at this point.
I have. I think one of my favorite moments was working the finals last year for Angelique Kerber. And as a net, I bring in the player's bag, and I have to give her the flowers, like, right before she walks in. Oh my gosh, I gave her the flowers. She looked at me, and I was like, good luck. I hope you do well. I grabbed her bag, and I walked in. I don't know if you can ever imagine, like, I don't know how many people are seated in Entourage, but all those people clapping as Kerber's walking in, and I'm right in back of her. I was like, she's number one, but I'm number two right now. Like, I'm just like walking in back of number one in the world, and then she won, and it was just a great moment. That's one of my favorite moments I've ever had.
Yeah, and there, you've got to also, I think, for the team, be aware of the TV audience. And I don't know, I think that not necessarily that there's a performance element to it, but it's all part of the show at the U.S. Open, and you guys make things click so well, especially on those big stadiums.
Well, you're not supposed to notice the ball person, and that's how well they do the job is unless there's this amazing catch that shouldn't have happened. You won't see them because it's working so, you know, they're right on. Throws are amazing. The, you know, care of the player is amazing. The unsung heroes of the U.S. Open.
Now, lastly, do you get nervous there? Or tell me too, because I'm a journalist and I get to cover tennis, but sometimes I have a hard time sort of having that poker face. But you guys have to be very stoic out there too, right?
I think I get nervous every time I get on Ash. I'm like, oh no, the player's gonna like look at me, like he's gonna ask me for a towel, for ice bag. But I don't know, you just have to keep it cool, you know, relaxed. You know, the players are just like you. You know, we all play tennis, so it's just a great experience, and we're all just, you know, having fun out here.
And is there? I think back to that Kerber-Pliskova final. Is there any feeling like sort of third set roaring crowd? You almost could feel it down there on court, I would imagine.
We can definitely feel all that the excitement, and every point is just like worth so much. So you could just feel everyone just like oohing and aahing and cheering every single point. So yeah.
Well, thanks both of you for speaking with us, and obviously best of luck as we head through the U.S. Open.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
I think for a lot of people, being a ball person might be a dream job, but very cool to hear how it actually works for the team here at the U.S. Open. Now let's go upstairs at Arthur Ashe Stadium with Andy Taylor. You know him as the voice of the U.S. Open. Do you get nervous at all? Is there any stress involved for you?
Absolutely. I think anytime you have Roger Federer or Rafa Nadal coming out and it's a big match, I mean, if they meet in the semifinals, yeah, I'm going to have some butterflies in my stomach before we actually announce them. And then when you have a full house in here, yeah, the pressure of the moment can get to you for a second. But then you just get so jacked and so excited, like a fan, for what's about to go down, that you want to deliver the best read that you possibly can so fans know exactly, you know, what's going on.
Now tell me a little bit of your backstory, because this is your 15th U.S. Open?
16th. Yeah, 16th.
Sweet 16th.
So my first U.S. Open, and clearly I got hooked on the sport of tennis after this. First U.S. Open, we had Venus and Serena in the ladies' final on Saturday night. And then the next day, Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi. Pete Sampras wins his 14th and final Grand Slam.
Not a bad weekend.
No! I really don't think, any final with the U.S. Open has lived up to that for me yet. And what an amazing opportunity for that to be my first one. But my backstory, more or less, is I was doing a radio show in Springfield, Missouri. I was moving into a house at the time, and I had no time on my hands, and I had a friend actually call and recommend me for a Fed Cup event that the USA was hosting Israel. And I'm like, oh, geez. Well, since you recommended me, I'll go do it. I went and did the event. I got a tap on the shoulder on the last day, and a guy said, what would you think about doing this at the U.S. Open in New York? And I was like, yeah, whatever, pal. That opportunity doesn't just show up in the Midwest, you know? Right. So I blew him off, and about 2 weeks later, the USTA called up and said, no, we're serious. We'd like you to come out and try out for the job. And by the way, next time the president of the USTA asks you a question, please don't blow him off.
Was it the president? Wow, really?
Yeah, it was Arlen Kantarian. He's really cool. And so that was the first year I came out, and I did the night sessions, and I was hooked. They were happy, and it's been a good relationship ever since.
Okay, so now walk me through a day in the life, because I'm out on Grandstand hosting this year, but things are a little bit different for you guys here in Ashe.
Day in the life, more or less... my responsibility, like you, is to get the bios written, get everything ready for the matches that day. We don't really get that until 4 o'clock the previous day. So, you know, the work starts the night before while the other matches are going on. You got to multitask, as you know. When you're doing this job, you got to multitask as much as you possibly can. But you got to make sure the bios are good, that they're sent to the right people, that they're vetted properly. And once those are in place, you start receiving the rundown for the day as far as sponsor mentions and giveaways and everything else that we're doing. And by 11 o'clock, we fire up the tennis. You bring the players on and off the court. I'm also at the same time recording videos, recording voiceover for other projects, things that are going on throughout the grounds. And you just sort of keep the ball rolling every day. It's like the day more or less begins at 4 o'clock when tomorrow's session, tomorrow's schedule of play comes out. And you just hustle. You race all day long.
Right. Now, most fans will know the U.S. Open through their television sets, yes, right? Or maybe some of them have come out to the USTA, the National Tennis Center here. But tell me, because we're actually sitting above Arthur Ashe Stadium. Yep. We can see the court below us. Tell me what this booth, because we've got a producer, we've got a DJ, yep, we've got a screen guy, everyone making this. This is a stage, essentially, for you guys to produce a show.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically like 12 stories up. We're in a whole row called lower broadcast, and you can see every aspect of what's happening down on the court. And then when you walk into this room, there's a director. His name is Todd. He's just to our right over here, and he's the one who calls the show. So you've got camera operators down on the court. There's an entire room filled with screens and audio guys and all of that whom he's on with, talking to, directing the action. And Todd will say, okay, bring out the first player. And so you've got a stage director down there on the court as well who cues the first player to come out. Then I get, it's like air traffic control, really. This is like an air traffic control room, and I'm lucky enough to be the one that gets to tell planes at what altitude they have to fly.
Yes, seriously. No, that's true, but I think it's so interesting just from a fan perspective to know that all of this, because we see the screens, we hear the right music, we hear your voice, yep, we don't actually know about all of those working pieces that goes into, as you said, making sure those plans land smoothly, yeah, and then that everyone gets to enjoy the tennis.
Yeah, it's a remarkable effort. And you know, if you ever do get the opportunity to go behind the scenes in Arthur Ashe Stadium, you begin to understand the complexity of the whole operation, because you know, there's an entire wing that's nothing but audio, and then there's an entire room that's nothing but video. And in this room alone, you've got a director, we've got, yeah, music coming from this room, we've got electricians that are all along here making sure that everything's working properly. And
did you know that now that we have this new roof over Arthur Ashe Stadium, there's one
for that button too.
Yeah, yeah, and it's one button. The guy who pushes the button.
Really?
Yeah.
I would want it to be like one huge latch, yeah, or lever or something that you just throw and sparks fly, and then the roof opens.
Okay, tell me about nuances of the job. Right, we're sitting here. You've got your two big microphones, your script read. You can see the court. You've got Todd there directing you. But what are some of the nuances as far as what you want to do and not do when you're delivering this product?
Well, clearly, you want to get your information right. So, yes, you know, when you're writing the bios, you want to make sure that accomplishments are accurate and, you know, people are from the correct country instead of a different. We all make mistakes. Sure. Things have happened. But that's significant, is triple and quadruple checking your facts is one of the most important things. But something you know all too well, Nick, yes, is pronunciation.
Yes.
One of the most challenging aspects of this job, because it's an international event. We don't have Jones and Smith and, you know, Peter and Dave down, right, there. We've got international names. And for example, we're watching a match right now with Juan Martín del Potro, and then you've got Henri Laaksonen. Now, when you see H-E-N-R-I, you immediately think to yourself, okay, international events, more or less a French name. But you got to do the research. Wait a second. He's from Switzerland, and he has Finnish heritage. So it's not pronounced Henri. It's pronounced Henri. It's little things like that, I think, that you got to pay attention to.
And sometimes you got to chase people down and say, listen, how do I say this? Or, you know, yeah, go to the tours or ask. Sometimes, I mean, for me on my court, sometimes I'm even asking the players themselves, yeah, because you want to get it right.
Yeah. When in doubt, you might as well. And I think they appreciate that a lot. Right. But there are oftentimes names are so difficult to pronounce that I'll ask and they'll actually go, oh, for crying out loud, just Americanize it. Like, yeah, for example, we all say Lucy Safarova,
yeah,
but she's Czech. Mm-hmm. It's like Lucia Shafashova.
Shafashova.
Yeah. Or in Polish. Gosh, Polish names are really difficult. You've got the doubles player, Michael
Przesnesky, but that's Americanized.
Right. So you say it's Mikhail Pushizhny.
Pushizhny. Exactly.
And, you know, I said he was trying to describe how to pronounce his name to me one time when I was in Doha. And, you know, I said, how do I say it? And he's going, Pushizhny. So I was saying it. And he said, God bless you. Just say it however you want.
Oh, perfect. Now, for you, lastly, just what's the favorite part of the job? What do you enjoy the most? Because obviously you get front row. I mean, we're a little high up, but front row ticket to the tennis. But what do you enjoy the most?
Well, clearly, you know, as a tennis fan, you're right. I mean, you really don't get a better seat. You're right on top of everything, and you're actually a part of the production behind the scenes. But for me, with events like this, my favorite part is being part of something bigger, being part of a production, collaborating with different people, and making it a memorable experience, not just for the fans that come out here to the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, but for the players as well. Yeah. That's our responsibility, you know, is to make this an experience. Yes, it's a sports event that's seen on TV, and we all get caught up in our individual jobs, but the collaboration, the work that we do together to make this event a success over 14 days every year means the world to me, and that's my favorite aspect of this job is you know, working with everyone like you and making this a really cool event that people will want to come back to and see time after time.
Okay, Andy Taylor, the voice of the U.S. Open. Now, I've been trying to do this on Inside the U.S. Open, trying to tell people what our podcast is named, but let's leave it to you. You can just tell us, I'm Andy Taylor, and you're listening to Inside the U.S. Open.
I'm Andy Taylor, and you're listening to Inside the U.S. Open.
Thank you very much, Andy Taylor. Quite fascinating to hear what Andy does every day in that booth, keeping things ticking along on Arthur Ashe Stadium. Lastly, we were lucky enough to be joined by a Grand Slam winner and former world number one, Bethany Maddock Sands. She's had a busy U.S. Open, and we sat down with her just inside Arthur Ashe Stadium. Okay, well, I guess first of all, everyone wants to know, how's the knee doing?
The knee is doing a lot better. I think the last week I've made the most progress out of all the weeks it's been. It's at, where am I at right now? I'm at 7 weeks post-surgery, and right now, obviously, I'm sitting down and my leg's almost at 90 degrees, which I'm really excited about. Trust me, it's the little things right now. I was just excited to be able to sit down like a normal person because post-surgery, I wasn't allowed to bend my knee. So it's been a couple weeks. It's still a little stiff, but I feel like I'm on the road to recovery.
There was a lot of in bed with Bethany on Instagram, right? I loved that.
I was in bed a lot, yes. And people joined me in bed with Bethany. And then I kind of had to flow it to where I was out of bed with Bethany because I was getting out of bed a little bit more. But recovery is important. So I don't want anyone to worry. Yeah. I'm still going through all my rehab, my recovery, getting plenty of rest. Obviously, I'm going to be back next year, but for now, I'm on the other side of things.
I was welcoming you to the dark side. Now, we just made our way. We're outside of Arthur Ashe Stadium in a suite. It's nice and cool in here, but you just trudged your way up valiantly up some escalator steps. Now, just for an athlete, how do you sort of balance the frustration of going from, you know, playing a pro sport to then having to, you know, you're among us normal people, but now you've got this injury to deal with. It's got to be frustrating, right?
No, you know what? I've actually taken a really different approach with this injury. This isn't my first rodeo. I had a couple hip surgeries, and I feel like I was really anxious to get back. As obviously, I want to get back on the court, but the time is not now, and I'm okay with that. I'm really enjoying the moment. I talked about this when I was playing, and it's easy for me to say that, you know, when I was winning, when I was number one, but after all this, can I still enjoy the moment? There are other things that I love doing. I'm enjoying hanging out with friends and family. I'm not even looking at it being frustrated. I'm happy for all my friends out there that are doing well, feeling great, and playing awesome. But I like the other side. I don't mind it. I mean, I feel like I've, you know, been everywhere around site here at US Open. I've been doing live interviews with Kathy Rinaldi. I've been talking with the players. But I think my goal coming here was really to kind of show everyone the fun side of tennis. All these players that I've gotten to know over the years, competed against, are awesome people. I mean, I'm really inspired by all of them. I'm down there in the trenches with them. I see them working hard up in the gym. I see them getting treatment in the training room. So I know what goes into it. And I'm happy to kind of tell their story in a way from my perspective.
Yeah. And so from your perspective, I mean, to not play this US Open, does it feel strange? Because as you said, you've had injuries before, but walking onto the grounds or hobbling onto the grounds, being here, what are the emotions then that you sort of have to click through then to get focused on what you are doing?
I really came here thinking I was maybe going to be upset, and I really wasn't. Mm-hmm. I've really adapted to this attitude of enjoying where I am in the moment. I look back at some of my past injuries and I see that I maybe hold myself up a little bit in my house. Didn't want to watch tennis, didn't want to, you know, talk to my tennis friends because I wasn't there. And I look back and think it was a big waste of energy because I ended up coming back anyways. And I actually ended up coming back and playing better than I ever had. So why not enjoy the process and come back? So I'm totally approaching this differently. And, you know, I'm a big believer we have control of our attitude. Doesn't matter our circumstances, doesn't matter the people around us, what people tell us. And whether it's a good time or a bad time, that's what I believe in. So I'm sticking to that. And I'm choosing to wake up happy. And there's so much of life to enjoy. And there's so much happening around US Open. And even though I'm not playing, I'm rehabbing, I'm getting around. There's so many wins in my day, even though it's not on the tennis court.
One of the wins of your day is your outfit today. I'm really sad that this is a podcast we can't show. You've got great pink lipstick on. You've got some bangle gold earrings. Yep. There's a bow white top. Is that white? I mean, as usual, you're killing it on the attire front. Has that been fun as far as, you know, we see your fashion on the court, but now you get to do it off the court on a daily basis for what you're doing here?
I know. I get to wear some normal clothes and it's been kind of fun. And this, I'm wearing like this super cute jumpsuit right now from Ted Baker. And it's funny because I walk into the locker room and obviously everyone's coming in from practice or from a match, all sweaty. And there I am. I'm like, my pre-match routine involves contouring and highlighting, but nobody's judging me too hard down there because I'm actually there before almost any of the players get there. And it's funny because they walk in and they're like, I feel like we see you everywhere. And then we walk in the locker room and you're the first one we see. So no, but it's been fun kind of dressing up. And obviously I love fashion. So it's something whether I'm on the court or off the court, it's something I love.
Okay, so now detail for people what you have been up to specifically, because lots of work around media this US Open. I love your approach just in general of enjoying it and sort of taking advantage of the other side. But what have you been up to?
Well, what haven't I been up to? So I'm hoping everyone's following me on Instagram, especially my Insta stories. I'm kind of posting that as my day goes along. And I'm doing live feeds for US Open. I'm on their Snapchat. I'm on their Twitter. I'm on their Instagram. I'm talking to players. I'm helping them with their social media. I've been doing the Tennis Channel set in the morning where they have their pre-match show. And we talk about the matches from the day before. And we talk about upcoming matches, highlights. And then ESPN later today, I'm going to be commentating some matches. So I feel like I'm getting involved in almost everything on top of rehab. Right. You know, I'm still, that was one of my priorities going into this before I even kind of agreed to do everything I'm doing right now for TV and for radio and for social media. I wanted to make it a priority to still do my rehab. I didn't want to go 2.5 weeks here and then all of a sudden I was, you know, a month behind in my comeback. So, I've been fitting everything in. I've had a lot of help from my husband over here. He's been coordinating and helping me post and video and stuff like that. Totally. But no, it's been a lot of fun. It's just a little slower getting around with my crutches. So you can hear me coming though. So I feel like I give people a warning in advance. They can just hear the crutches along the hallway. Yep.
What has been, I mean, because you're doing a variety of things, so what's been, and obviously you've done media for so long, but what's been the biggest challenge for you as far as learning, you know, interview styles? Or obviously you just have such a relaxed approach, and I think that's probably what helps you the most.
Yeah, I think I can really, I think here's my strength. I know what questions we all get asked as players. I know what gets repeated. Yeah. And I know where we as players get frustrated when we can't answer things a certain way or talk about a topic in the way we want to. It's really, so I'm trying to kind of bring out the conversation on what the players want to talk about and really share their stories and their personalities. Because so many times when we get in this mode of answering questions, it's just the same answer all the time. And you almost, your personality doesn't shine through. And I've always been outgoing in my interviews. So, you know, it's a little bit easier for me than say some of the other players that maybe English isn't their first language and they're not quite as comfortable, but there's so many like cool chicks and guys out there. And I just kind of want that to come across whenever I'm talking to them or on TV. And to me, I'm pretty relaxed. I like to have fun. I like to laugh. And I figured, you know what, I'm just going to bring that, you know, over to TV, over to radio, because that's me. And again, when I agreed to kind of do all this, I still wanted to enjoy it. You know, I'm not doing this because I have to. I'm doing it because I want to, and it's fun. And so I hope that's what comes across.
Right. I think it does. A lot of fun. Now, lastly, you mentioned this a couple times, but talk us through the rehab and the comeback. And I don't know if you're able to project sort of where you are with that whole process, but you are coming back.
I am coming back. So nobody worry. I will be back on the tennis court, traveling the whole WTA schedule. But I'm actually ahead of schedule right now, not even because I'm rushing it. I've really, in my mind, taken this slow, and, you know, my knee will bend when it wants to bend. I've been doing my rehab faithfully every day. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm throwing everything at it. I have an electric modality that I sleep with. I have tough rehab every morning, every night. I have acupuncture. I mean, you name it. I'm obviously putting the work in towards it. But I am coming back, and I'm aiming for Australian Open, which is 6 months from surgery. It's quick, but it's going to be my goal. And that's, and again, I'm going to say that if that's not the time and it needs to be a couple weeks later than that, I'm okay with that too. I think I just wanted to set a goal out there and then go towards it.
Thank you, Bethany Maddox-Sands. You can find Bethany on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. What am I missing? Not Tinder. You're not on Tinder.
I'm officially not on Tinder or Bumble, but I actually do make my friends' profiles, though. So if someone needs that, I know how to write a good profile.
Okay, well, I'm swiping right for this interview. Okay. Thanks, Bethany.
Thanks, Nick. Anytime.
Okay, that's a wrap, everyone, for us here on episode 4 of Inside the US Open. A big thanks, of course, to Andy Taylor, also to Tina and Francesca. Also a big thanks to Bethany Maddox-Sands for joining us on this episode. You, of course, can subscribe to the US Open podcast. Just go to Apple Podcasts or to Audioboom, however you get your podcast delivered to your earbuds. That's where you'll find us. You can also go to usopen.org. Just click on the social page and hit podcast. We're right there for you. I'm Nick McCarville, and we'll be back with more of Inside the US Open in the coming days.